Look up. Look way up. He sits alone atop the standings. Bob McCown and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We shall touch faith.
Hello, Teeny Beans and Blue Jeans. It's Thursday, May the 21st, 2015, and this is Primetime on the Sportsnet family of networks. I'm Bob McCown, and that is Arash Madani right there.
Good afternoon, Robert.
Have you been in all week?
I have.
Since Monday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
See, that's not all holiday. Week.
All right. Are you back tomorrow?
I'm back tomorrow for the roundtable.
Wow.
Yeah. Lucky me.
Is this all you do then, all week?
Yeah. Although I did went to the Argo press conference that turned into the Babcock press conference yesterday.
Only Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment
it was amazing.
Would upstart themselves.
Yeah.
Hysterical. The aforementioned Mike Babcock, the latest in the seemingly never-ending list of Toronto Maple Leaf coaches, will join us in studio. The first in the history of this long franchise to get an eight-year contract.
Yeah,
I haven't had an eight-year contract.
He actually told the print reporters today that he was offered a 10-year contract, and he turned it down.
What, wasn't sure if he wanted to stay for years 9 and 10?
Right. And that there was no out clause.
Really?
That the team wanted him to commit. So I'm sure that's how they met in the middle at 8.
Wow.
So we can talk to him about all of that.
Why wouldn't he take a 10-year contract? Maybe he thinks he'll be worth more in years 9 and 10.
Would you want to be the head coach of this team for 10 years?
I want to
would
be
you
coach.
Be?
I want to be coach of this team for 10 minutes.
Right.
Forget 10 years.
Peter Horacek agrees.
Holy cow. Well, poor but Pete, I'm not in the business. I'm not. Yeah, you know what? Life's a biatch.
Right.
So Babcock will join us in studio. Now, we've talked to Babcock numerous times on the air here, but I've never met him. So I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Absolutely.
He seems like a good guy. Serious guy.
McGill guy?
Yeah. Born in Ontario. I thought he was born in Saskatchewan, but he was not. Born here, lived all over the place, and wound up growing up in Saskatchewan. And now becomes the latest, the 30th?
The 30th.
The 30th coach. 30, that means end in newspaper business. Doodly doodly doo doo doo. So we'll get the story from him. We'll find out, for those of you who didn't see the news conference, although I thought there were things that weren't covered in the news conference exactly, but we'll try and get him to tell the story of how this all happened.
What jumped off the page that wasn't discussed this morning?
Well, I'll tell you one of the first questions I'm going to ask, and it might be the first one, is yesterday morning at 8 a.m., he went to Ken Holland's house, and they sat around for about 40 minutes. And I want to know what they talked about. Because at that point, according to Holland, Mike hadn't made his decision yet.
Right. It was around 11:15, Holland said yesterday.
And that he made the decision.
Right.
He called him back and said, I've decided to go to Toronto. So I have a theory on it. I don't know if he'll be, I don't know any reason why he wouldn't be honest about it, but I think given he hadn't made the decision, here's a guy probably didn't sleep much. Holland is, I believe, a good friend. And I think he had sort of settled in his mind, all right, I've come down to Toronto or Buffalo, I guess. But I still have an offer from Detroit here. And it's very difficult to leave someplace where you're happy.
Right, of course.
You know?
Of course.
And I don't think there's anything to suggest he wasn't happy. I think he was making good money. The offer on the table was a lot less than the Maple Leafs, but it still would have made him the highest paid coach by a considerable margin in the NHL. The contract was 4 or 5 years, the offer that he'd gotten. And I'm going to guess, and I'm going to say this to him, I'm going to guess that if Ken Hall, he went there to see if Kenny would
up it. Tee up?
Yeah. Just up it a bit. Like, if it was 4, would he go to $5 million? Would he go $5 million 5 years? And if he'd done that, my guess is Babcock would have stayed.
He would have stayed in Detroit for half the money.
Well, less years.
Less years.
About a 25% reduction in pay. So $5 million a year as opposed to 6.25.
Sure.
I've done it. I did it with this company. I got offered a job with another company, and it was for significantly more money. And when I told them what the job offer was and how much it was, I went to them hoping they'd match.
Yeah.
And they literally, the general manager president at the time, immediately stood up, reached his hand across the table, and he says, "Congratulations. We wish you good luck. We hate to see you go." And basically said, you know, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
Right.
So I went home and spent that night getting ready to go, talked to a bunch of people. I was done. I was gone. And at 8:45 or 9:15, I can't remember which, either quarter to nine or quarter after nine, Nelson Millman, then the program director, called me and he said,
"Terrific guy."
Yeah, said, "Can you come in?" And I went in and they made me an offer, which was, as I recall, 20% less per year than what I was offered at the other place.
Right.
And I took it, which pissed the other guys off.
Sure it did.
And the other guys happened to be this very channel. The TV channel that we're on when it was The Score.
Right.
And they made me a very lucrative offer and a very good offer, and they were very nice about it. But when push came to shove, it's the guy you know versus the guy you don't know. And I mean, I took less money just because I was comfortable. And it was no disrespect intended to the at that time, The Score. I just felt like I know these guys. I like these guys. I know what I'm doing. I know how to do this. You know, I could probably spend the rest of my career here if I want to. But over there, I don't know. I think it was a 3-year offer or something, 4-year offer. In any event, so I walked away from many thousands of dollars. And having gone through that, when I heard Kenny talk about Mike coming over for 40 minutes at 8 o'clock in the morning and he hadn't still made the decision, I said, I'll bet you I know what he did. He was looking for that. Just give me something. Get me close to what I'm being offered and I'll stay.
Do you think at that point Ken Holland said, you know what, this ship has sailed. It's been 10 years. It's been 10 good years. We've won a cup here. We've come close here.
Well, what Ken said was that and Ken's going to come on with us later.
Yeah.
We'll talk to him about it. I think the offer was 4 years at the time. He said, you know, I can go to 5.
Right.
But the money is the money. And I'm led to believe that the offer was actually higher than what I thought it was. I was told he was offered 3.2 to 3.4.
And what was interesting is Babcock's former assistant, turns out Todd McClellan got $3 million reportedly from Edmonton. So for a minute, for a day, it was Todd McClellan was the highest paid coach in hockey until...
Mm-hmm.
Well, until that's been today.
Blown out of the water. Mike Babcock will be with us in about a half hour. He'll join us in studio. Also, Doug McLean of the NHL and Sportsnet. Ken Holland, the executive vice president, general manager of the Red Wings, who will talk about, you know, his side of the conversation and the process. And in the middle, yummy, Jerry Sullivan of the Buffalo News.
Yeah.
Who is never short on opinion on things that the sports teams in Buffalo screw up. I'm not saying they screwed this up, but I can't wait to hear what Sullivan has to say on this.
I tell you what, if there is a rematch Mayweather-Pacquiao, it's the undercard to Babcock versus Rex.
Oh, man. Here's Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. Oh, with his own music. Not many people get their own music. Hello, Deitch. How are you?
I'm good. First of all, the fact that I am preceding Mike Babcock...
You are.
That is unbelievable. I mean, I feel like whoever, it's like the guy who preceded Hendricks at Woodstock. I'm probably not...
I don't even know who
really
that was.
Your guests, because you know maybe a little better lead in for the new coach.
No, you're a perfectly good lead in.
Appreciate coming in. And Jerry Sullivan, by the way, given I used to live in Buffalo, was a bit of a mentor of mine and wrote my grad school recommendation letter. It was one of the three.
Really, huh?
I'll always be grateful to him. I do love the guy. He's become certainly crankier as he's gotten older.
Oh my God, yeah.
But he's a very talented guy, and I will always have his back.
He is never short of opinions.
But the Buffalonians are clearly not happy about the Babcock situation. But I mean, come on, man. Look at the money Toronto's paying him. Toronto's an incredible city. I know Buffalonians aren't happy, but you know, it's not like the guy went to Oshkosh. I mean, he's going to Toronto. You got to understand that.
Well,
he's going to the Mecca of hockey. That's not a crazy decision.
I'm guessing there's something I got to tell Babcock, and that is, you know, Mike, you could have got a house for about 25% of the price in Buffalo, in suburban Buffalo.
But he's not looking for a house in suburbia. He's looking for a downtown condo. He and his wife are empty nesters now.
Well, maybe he is, maybe he isn't.
That, and you guys will find this out, but after living in suburban Detroit probably for a long time raising kids, my guess is they probably want to venture in a city now. And if that's the
maybe.
Case.
Maybe.
Well, totally.
Phenomenal city to be in.
Oh, it is. I grant you that. But, you know, under any circumstance, the real estate is tangibly cheaper.
Yeah, it's like New York. You get a 600 square feet for like $3,000 a month.
Oh, no. Not even close. Way more.
Really?
Oh, no.
God bless New York, though.
Oh, no. It's off the charts. It is. It's scary. In any event, so I stayed up late last night.
You watched?
I watched Dave. I watched Dave's last show. I was always a Dave guy. I went from being a Carson guy, because I'm old enough to remember Carson.
Sure.
Directly to Dave, because Dave used to follow Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
I was very upset when Leno got the Tonight Show. So was Dave. and he wound up going to CBS. And I stayed
with... Do you remember how big that was? When he was going to go head-to-head with Leno and
monster
the first
story.
Monday night, how huge that was going
well,
to be.
Well, they made a made-for-TV movie about it.
Of course.
That actually was pretty decent.
A couple of books, too.
So... So I watched Dave last night. Rather than give my opinion first, I assume you watched Deitch?
I did.
And?
I thought it was great. I mean, I thought that was the way to end a show. And the show's ending, I thought, stayed true to the roots of the show. I'm a Letterman guy. Carson's a little before my time. I do remember him, at least as a very, very little kid watching.
Sure.
Leno is disappointing to me because I loved Leno as a stand-up comic. I thought he was edgy. I thought he was funny. I thought he had a little bit of danger. And when he got that NBC job, he became, in my opinion, nothing more than kind of the celebrity suck-up interview that's sort of endemic now today with, like, the Paris Hilton, Kardashian crowd. That's what bums me out about Leno as he became. And certainly you're going
to Hugh Grant may disagree with you, Deitch.
He became sort of Vanilla City. Letterman, even if you think as he sort of got older, his show got away a little bit from his iconoclast roots, and that was my guy growing up. Like that, the whole show was about basically taking you in as a television insider, and kind of in a way, sort of giving the finger to corporate and doing these, you know, things that you never saw on television that were just sort of sardonic, sarcastic, ironic. So, I especially as a young person, I love that show. I did get away from it a little bit, certainly post college, but I thought yesterday was great. I thought he was honest and paid a great tribute, I thought, to his staff, and then the end montage, which sort of captured the guy. Really, man, it just like sort of like really hit home just how long he had been part of television viewers' lives. That's, I mean, a 3-year career in television is just, that doesn't happen at that kind of rate. So I really liked it. I thought it was cool, and just I even think how he ended the show with the Foo Fighters, sort of paying homage to the song that he used to listen to when he had his heart issues. I thought that to me is the way to end a show. That it wasn't maudlin, it wasn't like, you know, let's bring people on to sing to Dave like Carson did. I thought that was just a cool way to end.
Yeah, Bette Midler was on the final show.
Bette Midler, exactly.
Well, here's what I would say. What this reminded me of watching some of the bits. Now, he didn't do as much as I would have liked. I would have loved a real 2-hour go away. You know, here's the best of Letterman over the last 33 years. But having said that, there was enough of that in there to remind me how good and how funny and how unique the show used to be.
Right.
And at the same time, it made me kind of melancholy because I realized, well, Dave, you haven't been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, maybe because he's older, maybe because of health reasons, didn't have the energy. Maybe he was late. I don't know. I don't know why. But a lot of those bits and things that he did with great regularity, the characters that he created and brought on the show, have been gone for many years on the program. And I'm not here to critique it, but I flashed back to all of those bits that he used to do with great regularity and thought, wow, I forgot what this show actually was like. It wasn't monologue, little bit at the desk, top 10 list, two guests, maybe a band, say goodnight, go home.
Right.
There was all kinds of other stuff going on in the middle of it.
I just wondered, and you guys can follow up on this, and I don't know what the right answer is, but I think, and this, listen, I'm someone who listened to Howard Stern as a kid, and I still listen to him, and I still think he's among the best interviewers I've ever heard. But one of the hardest things, it seems to me, to be in sort of broadcasting or entertaining is when you are essentially – when your show is sort of an anti-establishment show – and I use those in quotes because, I mean, if you're on television, it really are the establishment. But guys like Stern and Letterman to me were always anti-establishment. And when the anti-establishment becomes the establishment –
yeah.
That's such an interesting thing. Like, how do you maintain this kind of independence when you become
interesting
the establishment? And that's, I think, the hardest thing for guys like those two is to not morph into, this kind of, like, Lenoization of your show. And I think that's what Stern has to fight, and I think that's what Letterman fought. In Stern's case in particular, I mean, when you are worth, like, hundreds of millions of dollars and you have a house in the Hamptons and your buddies are, like, Matt Lauer – and, you know, people of that world, it's very hard then to do your radio show and rail against the world. And those who have sort of maintained that kind of iconoclasm, if you want to call it that, that's amazing to me. And I almost think, I don't know if you guys agree with me, the only way to do that maybe is to become a little less famous. So you almost have to sort of be like, if you want to use it in music terms, if you kind of want to stay like the Ramones or the Violent Femmes or the Clash, you can never really become the Rolling Stones or U2. And that's what's always interesting to me with Letterman. And I think your statement is correct. I do think a lot of the shows after the, the 2000s, I think were very, very stock.
Well, I wonder if it was health, too. I mean, because he had the multiple bypass.
Yeah.
And I can't document. I didn't watch enough to say that. From that point on, it absolutely changed. But it was approximately then.
And that's where I wanted to go. Dutch, do you know what the ratings are these days for the Fallons, for the Kimmels, for the Lettermans, and what that compares to the heyday of Leno and Letterman? And are people still watching that time slot?
Yeah, I don't cover late night, but I think Fallon leads, Kimmel is second, and I think Letterman was third for a long time. This is a guess, but I think Fallon may have drawn something to the effect of maybe 2 million, 2.5 million, and then it floats down like Kimmel 1.7, Letterman 1.5. It could be a touch higher on all three of the guys.
That's still significant.
That's way down, I think, from the Carson era.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Which was putting up big numbers, obviously less television universe. But, you know, Conan is there in terms of the same time slot you're competing against. Sports. The interesting thing with all this stuff, it's the same with morning television in the States, is the universe really isn't that big. But the fight for the pie is so intense because there's so much money to be made at those slots that, that's why it's really competitive. Letterman for a long time, until I think these last couple months or so, was certainly trailing Kimmel and Fallon in the ratings. My guess is once he announced his retirement and we got really close, he was probably winning those nights. But it's... You know, it's a tough go. It'll be very interesting, you know, if you sort of want to look forward. I honestly have no idea how Colbert would do. Mm. His character was immensely interesting on Comedy Central where he had more freedom, but now he's not doing that. He's going to be Stephen Colbert straight. That's really fascinating. That show could be lights out great or it could be a bomb. It's a pretty interesting choice by CBS.
If I had to bet, I'd take the latter, I'm afraid. But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know whether his audience follows him. What was I going to ask you about? about Dave. Oh, Dave was such a Carson guy.
Yeah, he was.
They were friends. He worshipped at the altar of Johnny. And I think in many ways tried to lead his life in a similar fashion, staying below the radar, not going out in public very often.
And quite frankly, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but Johnny kind of had a reputation of being a jerk.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Letterman sometimes had that as well.
Oh, sure. Johnny, when he left The Tonight Show, essentially became a recluse. He didn't appear hardly anywhere after that. What does Letterman do?
You know, he's 68. He's not a young man in terms of retiring in the way, my guess is Leno may be 60, 61. So I wouldn't be surprised if Dave, given that he's not ever been one to do a lot of television shows and sort of go around and market himself, I wouldn't be surprised if he, maybe not a total recluse, but he sort of lived in Montana most of the year and sort of stayed on the, you know, stayed sort of low key. I hope he doesn't. Not that I expect the guy. Not that I want the guy to do like the Hollywood Squares. But would be nice for him to occasionally just be around and to, you know, sort of like so we can see him, because I think he's just
one of the things
really an interesting figure and an interesting broadcaster. But my sense is, and I totally understand this, that I think for some guys, like, and this would be the case with Carson, I think as they get older, there has to be a kind of a vanity issue that, you know, people watched you for so many years when you were young on TV, and they had this permanent image of you as a 40, 45-year-old.
Right.
And when you're like 75, 80, you probably don't want your photo taken, because it's that's got to be tough when so much of your life you were judged on appearance.
You don't want to be brought in on a golf cart at Marlins Stadium on opening day.
Oh, God. Well, but you know, like most guys, he was a stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he got his start.
Yeah.
It'd be intriguing to see if he goes back and does stand-up. I mean, Seinfeld, who was on with him last night, did a little bit of that after the TV show stopped. He did a couple of tours, but he didn't really...
But a much younger
you're
man,
right? You're right.
Yes.
But he never really went back to it. He sort of did it, made a few bucks, made some appearances, kind of worked when he wanted to and if he wanted to. Is there any chance Dave goes back and does a little bit of stand-up? Leno's gone out and done some tours.
When Leno was in his prime, Leno was an incredible stand-up. I would love that. I mean, I don't know
if he would
do it, but how great would it be if Letterman just decided once a year I'm going to go to, you know, he's obviously a big Indiana guy. Once a year I'm going to go to Indianapolis and I'm just going to do like a two-hour on-stage show where I almost sort of do my show basically just to say hello. But I don't know. You know, you'd have to really know Letterman a little bit better to see if, you know, he's not a sentimentalist. And my sense is that this show is his goodbye and I'm done. What would be interesting to me is, would he has had production, you know, he's got a production company.
Yes.
And would he morph into the guy who wants to create the next generation of something? And maybe that's...
Maybe.
You know, maybe that's where he sort of keeps his professional hand in. But I think it would be, phenomenal if he did that. You know, it's not really a place anymore like a Larry King where you could come on and sort of do an hour interview. But that would be awesome if, like, Letterman, even like 1 year from now, he just went somewhere and did like this really interesting 1 hour interview where we could sort of get a sense of what his life is like. I think people would really appreciate that. But I don't know if he's the guy for that.
Start Players' Tribune of the entertainment industry.
Well, I know he did an extended interview with Oprah a few years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Where Oprah interviewed him. But I don't know that he's been on very many other shows. He never looks comfortable in that role.
Yeah, well, for if you're Letterman, I think the only show you're going on is the level of Seinfeld, Stern, Oprah. You're not going on a show with somebody who is not sort of that kind of iconic figure.
I think you're right.
I don't see Letterman going on Good Day Omaha.
Unless he's going back to Ball State.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That would be a cool kind of iconoclast move is Letterman's first interview, let's say, after not being interviewed for years with the Ball State radio station.
Sure.
Wouldn't that be great?
A college sophomore gets to do it. How awesome would that be?
That'd be appropriate. We got to get out of here. We've got the new head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, multimillionaire Mike Babcock's coming in.
All right, I'm going back to my Buffalo roots to figure out who's going to be coaching this team.
Nobody. It's coachless. Thank you, Mr. Deitch.
Player coach.
Talk to you soon.
Player coach Jack Eichel.
Oh, yeah, great.
Player coach Jack Eichel.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. He is the new head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mike Babcock is on his way here and apparently around the corner or downstairs or someplace. We'll take the break now, and we'll give you a full 20 minutes or so with Mike Babcock when primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
Blue Jays versus Angels, tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Coming up to 26 before the hour, primetime continues coast-to-coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk show. Bob McCowan, Arash Madani in our Toronto studios a little bit later on. Doug McLean of Sportsnet. Jerry Sullivan of the Buffalo News. Ken Holland, the Executive Vice President, General Manager of the Detroit Red Wings, all with us on the program. But the featured attraction is in studio right now. He is the latest, newest, and current head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Fresh off an 8-year contract, which nobody gets at a ridiculous amount of money. Mike Babcock is with us. Well, surprise. Congratulations.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, if you had asked me a couple months ago, I'd be surprised too. But you're going through the process that Kenny Holland and Mr. I allowed me to do after 10, you know, unbelievable years in Detroit. You know, it was, I don't know, 12 days long or whatever. I met with lots of teams. I enjoyed the process. It was gut-wrenching, very emotional, to say the least. But in the end, I'm thrilled to be sitting with you here today and be the Maple Leafs coach.
Kenny this morning talked about the fact that yesterday morning at about 8 a.m. you went over to his house.
I did.
And you spent about 40 minutes, 45 minutes at his house. And at that time, he believed you hadn't made a decision yet. I've been through sort of a similar situation. And my immediate reaction was, Mike's looking to see if there's any more there, that he's not sure about leaving. He's been there 10 years. These are his people. These are his friends. This is his city. Leaving is always harder than you think. Most coaches don't get the chance to do what you did. They get told they're leaving.
Right.
Is that why you went? Well, just to see if there was any way that they could come closer.
No. This is where you don't understand. This wasn't a financial thing at all. These teams all, it was no issue financially, okay? They had all done enough for me financially. What I tried to do with Ken Holland when I went back, really what happened, that night before I went to bed, I knew what I was doing. My daughter's a senior in high school. Her and her girlfriend, they left the paper too late. The printer went off at 3:32 in the morning. I'm like, are you kidding? It's just going like this. You can just hear it coming. And I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
So suddenly then I started revisiting everything. And so there's decisions that I had made. And, you know, we've been going over and over and over this. Now I had a different plan. So I got up in the morning and I texted the guys that I'd been talking to. And I said, I need till 11:30. I got to talk to my wife again. And when she wakes up, we're going to go it with coffee one more time. It's you know, we're talking about an 8-year decision,
yeah,
9-year decision, whatever, 10-year decision. So I went to see Kenny, and you know what's interesting is Kenny's been my confidant, made me a better coach, been a great man, been tight with my family, I've been tight with his for all these years. And now when you got questions, you got no one to ask, because you know, when my dad just passed, I would have talked to my dad a million times. He was a man of great reason, and you're looking for someone to talk to,
right?
So we talked. So we talked, and I asked him to talk to Mr. and Mrs. I, and then I phoned him before he ever did. I just said, I'm going to the Leafs. is, I don't know. I went through the process, went through all the reasons, and it was a great fit for my family. It was great. It's a big city. My wife and I can live downtown. We can have a different life. We're starting fresh. This is invigorating. It's a huge, it's a monster challenge. And so talking to Kenny, I don't know, it just made things clearer for me. His wife actually gave me a hug and said, I'm going to Mass, pray for you. And I appreciate Cindy doing that. It was a hard decision. It was very emotional for me, I have to tell you. But it was important to make the right one, and we have.
If Shanahan wasn't here, can you even evaluate whether this job would have been as intriguing?
Well,
because I've never understood really what your relationship with him is. You know, obviously you coached him. Sometimes it's difficult to turn around a guy that answered to you, and now technically you answer to him.
Well, I don't know if I ever, Shanny ever answered to me. They were veteran players. Shanny got 40 and 40 that year for me, and I still remember being under the Windsor Bridge when I got the phone call saying he was going to New York. His time was done in Detroit because Stevie was leaving. He thought it was the next chapter. He went to New York. I remember that conversation. But what I like about Shanny's story is Shanny, during the one lockout there, was probably hanging around the couch too much, driving his wife crazy, and then he upset it and up this summit. And then he went to work for the NHL, and he sat in a little booth wondering if that was the end of his life. And then he spent the next 5 years going to meetings and getting involved in this. And he created a life for himself. The first time he got interviewed for a GM's job, he wasn't ready, and told him.
Yeah.
He's worked his way to get here. He obviously likes it and has a plan. His plan, when he talked to me, when I talked to Mark Hunter, I'm a huge Mark Hunter fan. He's a hockey man, and he gets players. When I talked to those guys, it was great. And then when I went to see Larry at his home that night, and we went for dinner, when I left that night, and they made me a big offer right that night. When I got home, I said to my wife, that was impressive. I didn't expect to tell her that. I didn't expect that at all. But I was impressed. And then, you know, we went from there.
Mike, you said something interesting in the press conference today. You said from the coaching standpoint, you're going to coach every game kind of micro, but with the longer-term vision in mind down the road as soon as that game ends. How do you manage and balance that?
Well, I'm going to do what I've always done. Ken Holland and I have sat in that office for 10 years. We talk every single day, and we do everything we can long-term thinking, and I do everything I can to win. That's what I do, and I'm going to do the same thing here. But if you think the player decisions, personnel decisions are going to get in the way of our goal, our goal is not getting in the playoffs. Our goal is to be a cup team that bangs on the door, bangs on the door, bangs on the door, and then one day they open the door for us. That's what our goal is. That's going to take a serious build here. It's going to take serious people doing what they have to do and sticking to the plan for a long period of time. And the only way you win is by having great people.
Right.
And the more great people you surround yourself with, the better chance you have to really dig in when it matters. And it's hard. There's 29 other teams trying to do the same thing as you. And so I came in here with my eyes wide open. There's other teams ahead of us as far as their pursuit of their rebuild and get going. But Mark Hunter, I believe, is a very good scout. Our job is to get him as many picks as we can so that we can load it up and build a real program here that we can all be proud of.
The last 5-6 years, you guys have been a team in Detroit knocking on the door of trying to win that cup. You've had the approach with the veterans where you give them a little bit more rope. With the young kids, you're all over them. Does the approach at all change now with the fact that you're not going to be that team right away contending?
Well, what I would tell you is this is my approach, I believe, changes every single year. And so you got 23 players, you got to figure out 23 different ways to coach them. They're all different. But what I am with you is if I work for you, I want to know what you want because I'm going to please you. You tell me what you want, I'll please you. There's nothing worse than playing for a coach that can't tell you what he wants. You're a player, you're trying to read his mind. There's nothing worse than working for a general manager or a president that doesn't tell you what he wants. You're trying to read his mind. Just tell the guys, give them the plan, and have them execute. But I don't tiptoe around people, and I don't expect them to tiptoe around me. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that, if I cross the line with you, and I'll tell the people that are working with me, if I cross the line, just tell me. If you don't like the way I spoke to you, say, Babs, don't talk to me like that. I expect you to bring it every day, every single day. And I expect you to be a man when you don't and own your own stuff, period. I believe the game's honest. And if you're an everydayer and you're honest about your approach and you're professional with the way you eat, the way you train, the way you live, the way you live away from the rink, it shows when you come to the rink and the fans appreciate who you are. If you don't want to be like that, if you don't want to be part of the Maple Leafs, that's fine too. All you do is you go see Shanny. If you got a problem with me, you just walk across the hallway and see me. It's simple. I'm going to be very direct, but I also think I really like players.
Yeah.
I like being around. And you don't get to stay 10 years in one spot, 6 years in another spot. You must do something, right? So, you know, I'm going to push these guys hard, but I'm going to get to know them in a hurry. We need to make it safe here to play for these players. Safe so they can feel good about who they are. And so in order to do that, we got to build our program so we got a better program.
Well, we don't have to tell you about the business of the game. I mean, you know that. If you don't have a guy who is going to buy in, but the business of the game makes it very difficult to get him out the door, how do you manage that?
Well, we just make a decision over time.
Right.
But this is what I can tell you. I'm going to say it again. Good people are going to play for this team. What I liked about the process here was Shanny and the board. And when I talked to those guys, I asked them, 3 years out when we're getting ridiculed and your family's getting abused and it isn't going, are you still going to have my back? Do you understand how long this is going to take? Are you in for the ride? The fans are. It's not the fans that. It's the people running it that
get impatient.
Get discouraged.
Yeah.
Get worried. Get weak. We're not doing that. We're going to commit to the process. Now, is it going to be hard at times? Absolutely. But the board said they're going to have my back. Shanny said they're going to have my back. I'm going to have their back. They made a huge commitment to me in years. I made the same commitment back. At one point in the contract negotiation, I asked for an out after. They said no chance. I was pumped when they said no chance. Like, we're in it together. Let's do it. And, you know, the way I look at it is it's an unbelievable city with a franchise that is an unbelievable business. We have to have the on-ice product to be deserving of the sweater and this community and what we have a chance to do. And I don't know if I've been more excited. It's a great day.
You had other opportunities. Was there one thing about this group of players that helped influence you? You've talked a lot about the people, the management people, but there what?
No, I never.
Players didn't even come into the equation.
No, and I don't want to come off the wrong way there. This opportunity was afforded to me by the board, mm-hmm. Shanny, the great fans of this team, and this city. That's why I'm here. Now, do I think we have some players? Absolutely. Do I think we have more players than we know? We're going to find out because we're going to watch them. We're going to figure it out. And then we're going to build a real program. But there's no hurry here, at least not for me. Now,
right.
I got a burn to win. Ridiculous. I love winning. We're going to win. It's just going to take more time than I would like.
Your teams in Detroit had a specific style. Is this a style that you mandated? Did you and Kenny talk a lot about this style? Did it morph over time, or did you implement this?
No, it just changed over time. It changed every year. We tried to get better, lifelong learning, embrace what's new, find new ideas, try to be cutting edge. I hired him. You know, one of the things I'm most proud of in our run in Detroit over the last 10 years since the salary cap, the only team to make the playoffs every year for 10 years, we had averaged 106.4 points a year. I only know that because one of these teams I interviewed with showed me. we had 23 playoff rounds, most at that time. We had a great run. But what we did is we developed people. Steve Yzerman and Pat Verbeek in Tampa. Jimmy Nils in Dallas. Todd McClellan's in Edmonton. Paul McLean was in Ottawa. Who else? Bill Peters in Carolina. Blashill's going to be the next coach in the Wings. I'm missing somebody in that process. These people came to Detroit and they got better. And the players got better. And we developed talent and we made better men. And Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk and Nick Cronwell packed me around on their back for 10 years. You need good players. In saying all that, though, that's what we're going to do here. But you do that by building something. I'm a school teacher. That's what I am. we're going to build something here that makes people better, and other franchises are going to be attracted to it, and then they're going to take our people. When other franchises start taking your people, you know you're doing something good.
Did you think twice about this job, given the history of this franchise?
No, I 100 times about it. I went back and forth. You know, what's interesting is Randy Carlyle, Norris Trophy winner, 1,000 games, Stanley Cup winner, he coached here. Lots of good men have coached here.
Yeah.
But
very few have succeeded.
Yeah, in different levels of success. Pat Quinn, I thought, succeeded here.
I would give you that, yeah.
And what I would tell you, though, is that you can only coach what you're given. But when you get the people to buy into the plan, the board's in, Shanny's in, the fans are in, who's in the way? And I believe that the people that get paid to cover this great game, you get paid because there's fans watching. The more fans we have, the better off we are. There must be a big deal going on here. I've talked to more media people today than I've talked to since the Olympics. So in saying that, is most of you guys are fans of the Leafs too. You want them to do well too. Sure. Now, you get paid to hack all over us. I understand that totally. But just think of as a player when you go to a press conference or you go talk to the media after you win. You get used to doing that. You win all the time. The media's not so bad, are they? They're actually saying good things about you. You know, when you work real hard and you bring it every day and they say good things about you, it's not bad. You know, the years this I had to turn the standings upside down in Detroit when things weren't going very good or we lost a bunch in a row, I stopped listening to the media. I listen to country music and I don't listen to the talk radio. Why? I can beat myself up. I don't need any help.
I understand that.
My point is this, is if we create an environment, when we create an environment that allows these players to be safe, it's going to be way better. The other thing is, how many people from Ontario play in the National Hockey League? Once we make it safe, they're coming home.
You really think people will want to play in Toronto?
You got it. They don't right now.
It's hard.
Oh, it's really hard. Mark my words. They'll be coming.
Mike, what's your philosophy on analytics? This is an organization that has really taken a step in that direction over the last year or so. Where's your thought process there?
I love it. And what I love is I love information. So what I've tried to do is surround myself with as many young, smarter people than me, more learned in that area than me, and they give you information. Now, sometimes the information they give you, you don't think is very good, but lots of times it's great ideas. I heard a kid last year phoned out to the University of Michigan, said, I need a math guy, real smart guy, just graduated, real good social skills, loves hockey. Can you find me that guy? Boom. A couple days later, just so happened my kids knew who he was. We put him in our office next to our video coach. I said to him, I don't know what your job is. Figure it out.
Wasn't commissaric, was it?
No. But my point to you is pretty soon that guy was making a huge impact from the point that he had found things that we could use that were reoccurring situations in the game that led to success, staying on offense or getting out of the defensive situation fast. It was a great little thing he gave me. Then the next thing you know, he's evaluating my pregame talks. I'd come in after him, I'd say, what did I say? He'd tell me. There's a 24-year-old kid making you better. There's so many great ways to use information's great. You just got to make sure it makes sense and that you can't cloud your vision of what's going on. So that to me is what analytics is.
Congratulations once again. Thanks very much for coming in here. We hope to see you again with some regularity, although we understand your schedule is going to be very busy. If we don't talk in person, we'll talk on the phone. We're happy for you. We're excited on behalf of all the fans here, and we wish you the best of luck.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Thanks for having me in today. And you know, I want to say one more time, I'm so excited to be the Leafs coach.
We know you are.
We're going to do good things here. It's not going to happen as fast as anybody wants. That's just life.
Mike Babcock, the new head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We've got more to come. Thanks, Arash. We'll see you tomorrow. Primetime continues coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Gentlemen.
The Fan.